Today, the RBA to cut even lower. The DFA Daily to the 2nd of November 2020. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. There was a very significant article in Bloomberg today, which I want to discuss because it sets out very nicely the key questions relating to the Reserve Bank's decision tomorrow when they are expected to cut interest rates to a fresh low record, reduce its three-year yield target and unleash further bond buying as it tries to turbocharge a recovery now that the country is released from lockdown. And they went on to say that the Reserve Bank of Australia will cut the cash rate to 0.1% from 0.25% tomorrow, and it sets its yield curve control and bank funding facility at the same level while reinforcing no tightening for 3 years, economists predicted ahead of Tuesday's meeting. They also anticipate purchases of long-dated government bonds to narrow the differential with developed world counterparts and put downward pressure on the currency. The RBA has come under fire for failing to follow up its initial easing at the height of the market dislocation. It did expand a bank lending facility in September, but has otherwise stayed on the sidelines with modest bond purchases since May. The three-year yield has traded below its 0.25% targets at September on expectations of further easing. With Victoria now emerging from its second harsher lockdown, the RBA is set to do more. The central bank has maintained it was better to deploy additional stimulus when doing so would gain maximum traction. The recovery is unlikely to be robust enough to achieve the RBA's policy goals, says James McIntyre, Australian economist at Bloomberg Economics. With a sluggish demand outlook and a weak labour market justifying further policy support, it's difficult for the RBA to make a case to hold back. As part of lowering borrowing costs, Governor Philip Lowe is expected to reduce the rate paid on commercial bank deposits in exchange settlement accounts at the RBA to 0.01% from 0.1%. The main debate on Tuesday's meeting is over the shape of any longer-dated bond programme. Economists see scenarios which include the RBA moving to a traditional quantitative easing programme by announcing it will purchase a set value of bonds over a set time period. Economists suggest that this would be upward of 100 billion Aussie dollars. Or it might revert to what it did in March and April when the RBA was buying bonds along the curve to address market dysfunction within a set target. This provides maximum flexibility, an option the RBA traditionally prefers. Or it may set yield targets on bonds in the 5 to 10 year range, complementing its 3 year target. Given its first foray into QE, the RBA is likely to opt for a program towards the upper end of the 100 to 180 billion Aussie dollar range, says Su Lin Ong, head of Australian Economic and Fixed Income Strategy at the Royal Bank of Canada. Experience shows QE programs are almost always upsized, she added. State and territory government bonds are likely to be part of any QE program. The governor said in a question and answer session last month that Australia's 10-year yield was much higher than developed world counterparts, and he was trying to understand whether this was a result of the bank not purchasing bonds in the 5 to 10-year range since March. And Lowe also said that the bank was working through whether bringing down longer-dated rates would help generate more jobs at the heart of his policy objective. The most obvious channel would be a lower exchange rate. The Australian dollar has risen more than 22% since its mid-March nadir. Australia's jobless rate is currently 6.9%, and the nation's Treasury expects it to peak at 8% later this year. RBA number two Guy DeBell suggested last week that the economy likely exited the recession in the third quarter as growth in the rest of the country overcame the drag from Victoria's state lockdown. And data on Monday showed job advertisements surged 9.4% in October, and a separate release recorded a 15.4% jump in building approvals in September, some 10 times economists forecast, although it's a very volatile series. Australian home prices also advanced in October for the first time in 6 months as the virus is brought under greater control, according to CoreLogic. The difficulty is likely to emerge early next year as the government's wage subsidy programs is wound up and a burst of spending following the lifting of restrictions abates. The real losses are likely to come in the middle of next year, Australia and New Zealand Bank Group Chief Executive Shane Elliott said on Thursday. Why? Because there's always a lag, because people can hang on, going to wait and see how Christmas trading goes, and going to wait to see how the borders open up. He's sceptical about the impact of further easing, noting credit is already cheap. If homeowners don't want a mortgage at 2.5%, it's not clear to me they'll want one at 2.4%, he said. For now, households are cashed up from a combination of government stimulus and limited spending options during lockdown, but choosing to pay down debt and build up buffers. Policy response lags means that now is the right time for the RBA to move, said McIntyre. And more on those dwelling approvals, which rose 15.4% in December in season-adjusted terms, according to data from the ABS. The rise was driven by private sector dwellings, excluding houses, which increased 23.4%. Private sector houses rose for the third consecutive month, increasing by 9.7% in September. The September results indicate continued demand for detached housing following the relaxation of COVID-19 restrictions in most states and territories. A range of federal and state-based incentives are also providing support for the housing sector. Across the states and territories, dwelling approvals rose in Western Australia, up 42.6%, South Australia, 28.3%, Queensland at 19.3%, Tasmania at 18.8%, Victoria at 12.4%, and New South Wales at just 4.6%. Approvals for private sector houses rose in South Australia up 19.9%, Western Australia at 15.1%, Victoria at 9.7%, New South Wales at 7.3%, and Queensland at 3.6%. The value of total building approvals fell 17% in September in season adjusted terms. The value of non-residential building fell 36.7%, and the decline was driven by the public sector following a strong result in August. The value of total residential building fell in September, 0.7% down, comprising a 1% fall in new residential building and a 1.1% rise in alterations and additions. And finally, also in September, according to the ABS, new loan commitments, season adjusted, rose 5.9% for housing, rose 8.5% for personal fixed term loans, and rose 57.2% for business construction. That's, by the way, a volatile series. The total value of new loan commitments for housing rose 5.9% in September, season adjusted. The value of owner-occupied home loans commitment rose 6% to $17.3 billion in September. Approximately half of the rise in September's owner-occupied housing lending commitments was for the construction of new dwellings, which rose 25.3%. That followed a 19.2% rise in August. Owner-occupied housing loan commitments are at historically high levels, consistent with low interest rates and government incentives. For example, it's likely that the Home Builder Grant is contributing to increased demand for construction loans. The value of owner-occupied home loan commitments rose in all states except Victoria and Tasmania. Victorian owner-occupied home loan commitments fell 8.8% in season-adjusted terms, reflecting decreased housing activity in July and August when COVID-19 related stage 3 and 4 restrictions were imposed. The falling commitments for existing dwellings in Victoria was partially offset by a rise in commitments for the construction of new dwellings. The total number of owner-occupier first home buyer commitments rose 6%, reaching 13,040. The total value of loan commitments for investor housing was $5.3 billion, an increase of 5.2%, and the value of new loan commitments for fixed-term personal finance rose 8.5% in September, season adjusted, as commitments for vehicles recovered from the fall in August. And the number of owner-occupier first home buyer loan commitments increased 6% in season adjusted terms, and the number of first home buyer loan commitments for investment purposes accounted for just 4.4% of all first home buyer commitments in original terms. And owner-occupier first home buyer loan commitments accounted for 34.5% of all owner-occupied commitments, excluding refinance, in original terms. So what you can conclude from this is that the home builder packages that were released by the government and, of course, the state stimulus packages have fired up both the construction of new properties and approvals for new properties. And quite a few first-time home buyers are chasing these down. Now, of course, you've got to ask the question, is this pull forward of demand going to continue, or will it just create a greater hole next year at a time when overall financial pressures are likely to rise further? Remember that unemployment is expected to still go higher. And tomorrow, we'll be discussing our mortgage stress data, which also shows worrying signs. So superficially, this may look like a boom time with lending up and with approvals up. But below the waterline, we still think there's a long way to go. And I know that home prices rose just a little in October, according to CoreLogic, especially in minor centres like Darwin. But overall, the economy is still on the knife edge. And my own perspective is this. The planned cuts of rates tomorrow from the Reserve Bank will have only a marginal impact. We are very close to those zero bounds now. And unless they change their strategy and go into negative rate territory, that's as far as they can go. But again, you will probably see more quantitative easing, more bond printing, more money printing. But then the question becomes, will all that liquidity flow into more lending, or will it just stall? That, of course, is a discussion for 2021. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.